present Teddy Johnson as Steve Gardner in The Candle of Darkness, a serial thriller in six parts by Edward Boyd. The Candle of Darkness, Part 5.
Where does friendship begin? Where does it end? What do you do when a friend seems to have been spending his spare time as a homicidal maniac? Where do you stand when the truth seems suddenly revealed? What's the correct attitude when the police are at the door? The policemen at the door were all blue serge and discomfort. They had come from somewhere in a hurry, and their faces were red and moist. Hello, Mackenzie.
Inspector Gordon sent us here.
And this is?
Constable Robertson, sir.
I should have thought the inspector would have wanted to make the arrest himself.
Not a question of arrest, sir. Yet.
No?
There's trouble in the town. They've heard about, you know.
Yes, I know.
It started with a lot of hot-headed talk. Then it turned nasty. The inspector tried to reason with them, but...
You can't reason with a mob.
They're on their way now. I'd advise you to get out, sir.
They tear me apart.
Well, you're a stranger.
In their minds, I'm part of this household. Guilt by association.
What's happening?
We're all going to be lynched.
Maybe if we could get the young lady out of the house.
Why?
Because there's a mob coming up from the town to tear it apart.
This Delia business.
They've got it into their heads that Jimmy did it.
Did I hear my name mentioned?
You're in trouble, Jimmy.
Huh. You mean you've only just found out?
This is different. Listen. The vigilantes are coming. For you.
Maybe I'd better go and meet them.
No, sir. We couldn't allow that.
Maybe the simplest thing all the way around.
It might, sir. But Constable Robertson and I were sent here to cope. It's our responsibility till Inspector Gordon sorts it all out.
I hope he gives us a decent burial.
If we could only get the young lady...
It's too late now.
This crowd. There's a huge crowd coming up the hill.
Bar the door, Robertson.
Will someone explain?
That crowd you saw is on its way here.
To this house?
Yes, Mr. Walter, and it's out for blood.
But sure, the police...
There's only two of us, sir. We've sent out a call for help to the towns around, but it might be some time before it arrives.
Incredible. What have we done to them?
They've decided that Jimmy is the kind man.
Jimmy? But that's... Delia. Yes, of course, she's the cause of all this.
Yes, she is.
Yeah, I should have known she would be vindictive. When this nonsense is all over, I shall lodge a complaint about Delia with the police.
We'll not have far to look for her. She's in our mortuary.
Delia's dead.
Last night, sir.
Yes. Yes, of course. She had to die, hadn't she? Stand back from the windows.
They don't believe in ringing doorbells, do they?
Go out and talk to them, Constable.
They'd trample him to death as soon as he opened the door.
Hey, come on, Morton!
Come on, that door!
They're fixing up some stuff, a battering ram.
The door won't take much of that.
We'd better all get upstairs. Then they'll have to come at us up that narrow staircase. They'll get themselves jammed, and we might be able to stand them off till Inspector Gordon gets here.
I wish I had your touching faith in Inspector Gordon.
The man's talking sense all the same.
I don't think so. It's swampers in no time.
Look, we've no time to argue.
There's always time to argue.
With a mob?
Even with a mob. We'd better get upstairs quick, sir. I'm going to talk.
But Jimmy, you...
I'm going to talk to them.
You must be out of your mind.
So everybody keeps suggesting.
You'd be torn to pieces, sir.
That's a chance I'll have to take.
Oh, no, you won't. You'll get upstairs if I have to knock you cold and carry you.
Don't try it, Steve.
No, Steve, don't.
Where did you get that shotgun, Lindy?
I remembered seeing it in a cupboard yesterday when I was cleaning.
Put it down, miss.
No, it's loaded both barrels, and I know how to use it. But Jimmy's right. There's got to be a face up. Well, what other chance do we have?
Exactly. There we go with that battering ram. Look, it's only me that after, and if this thing doesn't work, then it's only me they'll get. I don't want anything to happen to anyone else on my account.
Inspector Gordon.
To hell with Inspector Gordon.
All right, Jimmy. Whatever you say.
Fine. Let's open the door, then.
All right, sir.
Now!
There he is! Get him! Get him!
There's one shot left, and anybody can have it. All right, then. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Well, my friends, you owe my father a new door. All you had to do was ring the bell, you know. Granted, we're not the most sociable family in the town, but we still answer the doorbell. Well, you're all here, aren't you? And I'm not going to pretend I'm delighted to see you. I'm not. But in a repulsive kind of way, I'm glad you came. I think we have things to discuss. And since I don't appear to have a great deal of future, well, all that means is there's no time like the present.
Will you get a present?
I think he's got them, sir.
It could still go either way.
I'd like to tell you a story. A piece of self-indulgence on my part. It's a long time since I was a stand-up comic, and maybe I've forgotten how to do it. Anyway, it doesn't matter. A lot of you here already know the story. It happened right here in this town. It happened during the Depression, when the word affluent wasn't even in the dictionary. There was a man here who worked in the rope works. And when the rope works started laying men off, he was flung in the street. He was a simple soul. If his brain had exploded, it wouldn't have blown his hat off. Now, there he was, out of work, and having a bad time. And the story goes on that he wrote applying for the job of hangman, saying that he'd served his time at the rope works. That was how the story went, and there are men among you I've seen laughing at it time and time again. Whether the story was true or false, nobody ever quite knew. But here's the funny thing. True or false, nobody would ever speak to the man again. He was an outcast, a pariah. He got so bad that finally he packed up and left the district. You hounded him out of town because you said he wanted to be the hangman. And here you all are wanting to be just that. I can understand why, of course. I can even sympathize with you to a certain extent. Your self-respect demanded a sacrifice. And, well, I was it. Your self-respect demanded a sacrifice because the kind man had almost destroyed it. He frightened you right down to the holes in your socks. That's what brought you here today, all you big, brave people. You had to kill the kind man to show that you weren't really afraid of him and that you denied your kinship with him. So you came along, courageously, 200 of you to kill one man. And the terrible thing is, you don't really care whether I'm the kind man or not. You literally couldn't care less. Someone has to pay for your shame. And if it's a substitute victim instead of the real one, so what? It's the killing that really counts. That's that, then. Now here's a bit of information about the kind man. I can't see who he is because I don't know. But I do know who he isn't. He isn't me. They tell me some people think he is. They tell me that even the police think so. They tell me I'm to be arrested. They tell me. I'm sick and tired of them telling me. So I'm going to do a bit of telling for a change, and I might as well start with you. I just want to tell you two things. Firstly, I'm innocent. Secondly, to hell with a lot of you. And now, if anyone would like to step forward to apologize, here I am.
Here's Inspector Gordon at last.
For heaven's sake, get Jimmy back inside.
Right, sir. Mr. Morton, in all my years in the force, I've never seen anything like it. It was just magnificent.
Thank you.
It was wild, real wild, wasn't it, Steve?
Yeah. What happens now, McKenzie?
Well, sir, Inspector Gordon's here. It's for him to say.
I'll be in the drawing room. You go with him, Lindley. I want to have a word with the inspector.
Okay.
Well, I've done the house now. Make sure there aren't any stragglers.
Well, Gardner, I got here just in time.
You didn't.
I thought...
McKenzie will tell you about it later.
Any casualties?
None.
You don't seem exactly friendly, Gardner.
Please, no. Not another one that wants to be loved.
Oh, you wrong me, Gardner. Where is he?
In there.
Right. Let's get it over with.
Are you charging him here?
I'm not charging him at all, yet.
I'd like to talk to him before you take him away.
Well...
Oh, come on, Inspector. I'm not going to bake a cake with a file in it. I only want to talk to the guy.
You've got 10 minutes.
He was sitting beside the fire, huddled deep inside himself. He looked ridiculously young and lost and attractive. Lindy sat opposite watching him, and the way she was watching him, I did not like.
You all right, Jimmy?
I'm freezing.
That's pure reaction.
I'm suddenly frightened.
Reaction again, you should recognize it from your Korean days.
Yes, Steve, I know. It's time to go.
The inspector's given me a few minutes.
What for?
I didn't confide in him.
That's not quite an answer, is it?
No. The answer is, I wanted to know if you're still going through with this.
Yes.
It's a nonsense, of course, you know that.
I don't want to discuss it, Steve.
I can't say I blame you.
What's that supposed to mean?
It means, Jimmy, that you're a crashing bore. A self-indulgent, self-pitying, self-dramatizing, impossible bore.
Come on, Steve, that's a bit strong.
It's all right, Lindy.
Now we're getting the Christian bit. He's turning the other cheek.
Look, Steve.
You're a hypocrite, a liar, and a coward.
How can you say that after what happened out there just now?
Shall I tell you what happened out there just now? Shall I? What you saw out there was a piece of tatty old theater, pure, unadulterated ham. Jimmy Morton, with his first audience for years. And he was willing to let it kill him. Rather than miss the spotlight.
Have you quite finished?
No. Out there today, you were at least acting out your fantasy for 200 people. But who were you acting it out for during the past few years? What audience had you then? Yourself, Jimmy, that's who. You were acting out this lousy, stinking drama for yourself. And all the time, people were dying. You realize that? People were dying. And you could have stopped it with a few words in the right place. But that would have spoilt the game, wouldn't it? All right, then. Now we've got a new thing starting, the martyr bit. But does that guarantee that innocent people are going to stop dying, does it?
Here's my father. You'd better ask him.
Well, I have the feeling that the inspector's becoming rather impatient, Jimmy.
I'm ready when he is.
I'm coming down to the police station with you.
You don't have to, Father.
Well, perhaps not, but I want to.
Let's go, then.
Well, there they go. And they deserve each other.
You really lost your cool there, didn't you, Professor?
Yeah, I did.
You were jealous.
I was what?
I could see it in your face as soon as you walked in.
Get you.
You were, weren't you?
I didn't like to think you were impressed by that piece of grandstand rubbish.
Like I say, you were jealous.
From where I was standing, you looked impressed.
Do you know what I was thinking? I was watching him all in love with himself and his secret sorrow, and I was thinking, what do I do to make him communicate? Do I let out a wild yell or take my clothes off or what?
Well, you fooled me.
Do you fancy me, Steve?
Strongly.
Stop sending me up.
Of course I fancy you. You're a bird, aren't you? And I'm the greatest bird fancier of all time.
I don't fancy you. At least not that way.
Oh, well, I won't cry. I'll just try to pick up the shattered pieces of my life.
It's a shame I don't fancy you. You see, you're straight.
A thing like that gets around, it could ruin a man.
Well, do you reckon I'm still gainfully employed here?
I reckon.
In that case, I'll go and make us some coffee.
Do that.
What now, Steve? Back to London?
Not yet. Not quite yet. I still have things to do. So, in the fullness of time, I went down into the town. Now more than ever quiet and ashamed. Hung over with the morning's near violence. And I took a bus into the next village. The village stood high on a hill, dozing across the sea. You could have counted the houses on the fingers of one hand. One of them was disguised as an antique shop. The oldest thing it had was a curling notice. Please prevent dogs from annoying cat when sleeping in the window. The last house was the one I was looking for. The house of one Miss Louisa Matthews. I don't know what I expected. Yes, I do. And so do you. But she wasn't. She was big and buxom, and as normal as fresh air. She made you think of milk and floury hands, and scrubbing brushes, and measles, and whooping cough. She was every mother that is, was, and ever shall be.
Come in, come in.
Thank you.
The place is in a bit of a mess.
You call this a mess?
Well, let's just see, I haven't tidied up yet. And now, Mr. Gardner, did you say?
That's right, yes.
Oh, sit down.
Thank you.
Oh, what can I do for you, Mr. Gardner?
How do you react to embarrassing questions?
I thrive on them.
Good.
Try me with one.
Right between the eyes?
I like that kind best of all.
Why does Jimmy Morton pay you £20 a month?
Because he's one of the finest people I know.
Which gets us exactly nowhere.
Maybe if I knew more about what this is made of,
it's made of Jimmy Morton. He's in terrible trouble. And what happens to him could depend on whether or not you've anything to tell me.
If that's the case, then I'll tell you anything you want to know.
I'll let the original question stand.
I call myself Miss Louisa Matthews, but that's really my maiden name.
And your married name?
Mrs. Frances Lennox.
Well, how about that?
I see you've heard the name before.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Jimmy was one of the few people who knew. You see, Frances kept me a secret. He was a bit sensitive about me being 10 years older than he was.
Then he went out and got himself killed.
Yes. I think somehow I expected that. It was as though something like that had to happen to Frances. He had a kind of doom on him right from the day he was born. And I think he knew it. He was a very unhappy person.
A genius, they say.
Oh, that's just a silly word people throw about.
I should think you gave him something nobody else ever did.
What would that be?
Peace.
Oh! Why are men so sentimental? Well, anyway, that's beside the point. After Frances passed on, I was left very badly placed.
And this is where Jimmy comes into the picture.
Right. He found this little house for me, and he pays me £20 a month. I don't object, but I'm not a parasite. I take the money because...
Because?
It sounds daft, but in some peculiar way, I feel I'm doing Jimmy a favor.
Yes, maybe you are. Tell me, did Jimmy ever pay you a lump sum of £250?
No, never.
Thank you for being so patient.
Not at all. If it would help Jimmy, I'd answer questions all day long.
I left the unexpected widow of the dead poet and caught a bedraggled bus. It wove its way through lanes and turnings, and every now and then the conductress would open the door and throw a newspaper at a garden gate. Once she missed. She smiled at me as though to say, oh, well, none of us is perfect. It was dark when we reached the kind man's town. There was light in Hughie McGinnis's tavern. There was Romilly Foster, too. He was sprawling priorically against the glistening, swabbed counter. And as he might have put it, blackbearding the captives of his cutlass wit and Captain Kidding the grey town's stolid merchantman.
Gardner, my metropolitan friend, come and astonish me with an intelligible sentence.
What would you like to drink?
A tankard of ale.
Scotch for me, Hughie, and a large one, please.
Thank you, Captain.
Let us, you and I, Gardner, settle ourselves in reposeful attitudes for a short, sharp session.
I'm sorry, I can't wait long.
Ah, the 20th century motto. You are all doomed hunters pursuing the frightful coronary.
One last whiskey, and one pint.
There's your drink.
Ah, thank you. Slang.
As you say.
Ah.
You saw that mob today?
I did. It gathering its snorting, snouting way past me as I stared down from my window in a torpor of fascinated revulsion. It gave off a dingy, muted roar like a suburban love affair.
Jimmy Morton's been picked up by the police.
In the circumstances, of course, it was inevitable.
You think Jimmy is guilty?
Doesn't matter what I think. It will be a sensational trial.
How long have you known Bill Williams?
About 5 years, I should say.
He was your source of information about Francis Langs's death.
He was?
Tell me about it.
Categorically, no.
Why not?
You're a friend of Jimmy Morton, aren't you?
Well,
so am I.
Well, then what?
At the moment, there's a tiny gleam of hope that Jimmy might beat this charge.
You're an optimist.
And let's say, rather, that I am not a pessimist, but I am a realist. And stories get around, despite all attempts to keep juries hermetically sealed.
I'm not with you.
If the story of how Francis Lennox died gets around, then Jimmy Morton has had it.
There's a flaw there somewhere.
You think so?
Yes, a flaw named Bill Williams. I wouldn't believe anything that character said.
You may be right, but that's hardly the point.
What do you mean?
I mean that the truth or otherwise of the story is incidental. True or false, it can only do harm. So it's better that it should not be divulged.
I don't agree with you.
Feel free to differ.
Where do I find Williams?
In Key Street, number 47. Beneath the icicle wing of one Mrs. Kehoe, whose smile has been known to turn blue litmus paper red.
You could have said that Williams, in his grim, trim, spotless, stand-beside-your-beds kind of room, was glad to see me.
What do you want?
A couple of words with you.
Emshie, blow before I kick you down the stairs.
You might even be able to do it.
I could.
It'd be a waste. I'd only come back with the police.
We've nothing to talk about.
Oh, yes, we have. For instance, there's the £250 you got from Jimmy Morton.
It was a loan.
For what?
I was thinking of emigrating. I was a bit short, so I went to see Jimmy. He was an old opal of mine.
£250 worth?
He was well-heeled. I did him many a favour when he was in the ranks.
What did you have that was worth £250? Was it something to do with Francis Lennox? Was it?
A bundle of papers. I found them in Lennox's kit.
Let's say you robbed the dead.
Say what you like.
What kind of papers?
Poems and things like that.
Did you read them?
I did. Rubbish about candles of darkness and stuff.
And Jimmy gave you £250 for them?
Well, they were original manuscripts, weren't they?
You'll have to do better than that, Williams.
Yeah, you're right. I can do better than that. I can get away with it, you see. People like Jimmy always get away with it.
What did you sell him?
Piece of paper with four signatures.
It belonged to Lennox?
No. But it concerned him.
In what way?
The four people that signed it executed him.
Executed?
Yeah. And in this paper they admitted it and explained why.
Go on.
Well, we were in the prison camp, see, and three of the boys tried to escape. They were caught. Next day, we were lined up and forced to watch what happened to him. We found out later that Lennox had tipped the guards off about the escape. And you'll never guess why.
Why?
To get a very special privilege. Paper for a poem he was working on.
You have to be joking.
Oh, sure. Three dead men. Big joke.
What happened then?
Well, things started to go our way. The enemy started pulling out. And they just went off and left us. Like so much litter. Which we were. We all split up and wandered around. Lost. Starving. The party I was with consisted of seven blokes.
Including Jimmy?
Including Jimmy. Anyway, we flapped around for nearly a week. And one day, he came across another escaped prisoner. He was just lying there. He broke his ankle.
Francis Lennox?
Yeah.
So?
One of the blokes with us was a little taffy named Reese. His brother had been one of the ones... Well, we discussed what to do with Lennox. Three of us were for leaving him. You know, solving it that way.
And Jimmy was one of the three.
No.
I don't believe you.
250 quid, remember? Well, that was it. We were outvoted 4-3, and Lennox had had it. So the other four drew lots to see who'd carry out the sentence. It was Jimmy.
Jimmy killed Francis Lennox?
Lennox was lying there with his broken ankle. He looked up and smiled. Well, Jimmy said? Jimmy said nothing. No expression. Cool as you like. Just shot Lennox through the head.
And they drew up this statement and all signed it.
Right.
Man.
Oh, he's a weird character, is Jimmy. A very weird character indeed.
The fifth part of The Candle of Darkness, a serial thriller by Edward Boyd. The production was by Eddie Fraser.
So, who is the kind man? We'll need to wait until after the weekend to find out. In part 5 of The Candle of Darkness by Edward Boyd, Steve Gardner was played by Teddy Johnson, PC McKenzie by John Young, PC Robertson by Calman Glass, Lindy Marshall was Hannah Gordon, Jimmy Morton was played by Jimmy Logan, Wilfred Morton by Leonard Maguire, Detective Inspector Gordon by Moultrie R. Keltel, Louisa Matthews was played by Nancy Mitchell, Romilly Foster by Douglas Murchie, and Bill Williams by Glenn Michael. The Candle of Darkness was written by Edward Boyd and produced in Glasgow by Eddie Fraser.